This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The U.S. is being very deliberate in saying that what, behind the scenes at least, what happened in northern Gaza should not be repeated in southern Gaza.
That is VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain on U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's visit to Israel. Details coming up. Also, the COP 28 Climate Change Conference is getting underway. And a new study shows most Africans want their governments to fix struggling economies. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Affairs Committee's Subcommittee on Africa is holding a hearing today on the topic Ethiopia Promise or Perils of the U.S. Policy. Two career diplomats testified fighting between Ethiopia national troops and the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front has ended following a brutal two-year war that killed thousands of civilians. However, many experts say atrocities continue in the East African country. VOA's Carol Van Damme is covering the hearing and is standing by from Capitol Hill. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Carol.
Hey, hi, Yehia.
So, what kind of concerns were raised by the committee members on Ethiopia?
Well, we heard from the chairman first, John James, who said in his opening remarks that he's very concerned about the status of Ethiopia's cessation of hostilities agreement, adding that the greater conflict has clouded Ethiopia's future. The deal, as you know, was signed a little over a year ago, but experts with the International Commission on Human Rights say atrocities continue on a large scale, especially in the Amhara region and Tigray, because the situation raises questions about Ethiopia's long-term stability, and said that the Ethiopian government is increasingly getting engaged with an arms race and is more concerned, it appears, he said, more concerned about defaulting on its international debt. James said American taxpayers are tired of being used by the Ethiopian government, in his words. So Mike Hammer, the special U.S. envoy to the Horn of Africa, he was the first person to testify. He said that the U.S. is deeply concerned about gross humanitarian violations in Amhara and the Oromia regions of Ethiopia. But he said, rest assured, we are clear-eyed about what's at stake in Ethiopia, Africa's second most populous country. And he said the U.S. is committed to a peaceful and prosperous Ethiopia. He also said that the U.S. is not satisfied with the ongoing rights abuses there.
So, Carol, were Ethiopians in the diaspora at the hearing? If so, what are you hearing from Ethiopians who attended the hearing?
So I talked to one man just before the hearing got underway, Ferhan Meskel. He's a former Ethiopian diplomat and an international lawyer who said he, too, wanted to hear what these career diplomats had to say and, you know, what the concerns were of U.S. House of Representatives on the panel. He said there's no question that atrocities are continuing to occur in parts of the country, especially in the northern part, in Amhara and Oromia, even in Tigray, despite the cessation of hostilities deal. He also told me that just last week there were drone attacks in Amhara, and then I asked him, where are they coming from? And he said it's clear to him that they're coming from the Ethiopian government. Now, VOA cannot verify that statement.
So who are these two career diplomats, and what did they emphasize when they testified?
Yeah, Mike Hammer, he's the special envoy to the Horn of Africa for the U.S., and he just wanted to, you know, emphasize that the U.S. is aware of these human rights abuses. They know what the commission, International Commission on Human Rights Abuses in Ethiopia is saying, that there is clear evidence that they continue, and that the U.S. is not just standing idly by. He said he was just in Addis last week, and he spoke to high-level government officials who said that they are working on these transitional justice courts that are supposed to take place in Ethiopia, and that the U.S. wants assurances that they will be credible and that there will be accountability for those who committed these abuses.
VOA's Carol Van Dam, reporting from Capitol Hill. Thank you for your input.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Young people across 39 African countries want their governments to address unemployment and economic mismanagement beyond and other policy issues, according to a new Afrobarometer poll, which also found that young and old Africans in most countries on the continent see their governments as failing. The survey found that young Africans are more willing than their elders to tolerate a military takeover if elected leaders abuse their power. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
African youth and elders are giving up on their governments to improve their lives and the well-being of the nation. Afrobarometer, a pan-African research network that surveyed 39 African countries from 2021 to 2023, says Africans overwhelmingly view their governments as failing. They are becoming less trustful of their leaders and those running affairs of state. Afrobarometer spokesperson Daniele Berry says young people are not satisfied with their democratic system in their countries.
You know, Afrobarometer found out that nearly 6 in 10 Africans, that's about 60%, are dissatisfied with the way democracy works in their countries. More importantly, young adults were seen to be more likely than those over the age of 55 to say that they were not very satisfied. Or not satisfied at all with the way their democracy is functioning. So we can see that the youth are slightly more likely than the adults to say that the democracy in their country is not functioning well.
Afrobarometer says 56% of young people between the ages of 18 and 35 will tolerate a military takeover in a situation where those elected abuse power. In recent years, Africa has experienced 6 coups in 6 African countries. In some of those countries, especially those in western part of the continent, young people could be seen in the streets celebrating military coups. Kenyan political commentator Martin Andati says young people want an instant improvement in their lives, something that some men in uniform have done compared to politicians who have been in power for decades.
You know, when democracy doesn't seem to be working, the people now prefer the military. You've seen some of those minerals like uranium and all that, which were being sold to EU power, to France and these other countries at a pittance. The entry of the military now has raised the prices and is creating hope for the people. The older fellows would prefer democracy because they were scared about the military. But the youth, you know, want quick solutions. So if the military looks like they are going to offer quick solutions, the youth will go for that.
Some military administrations like those in Mali and Burkina Faso have failed to provide security to the parts of the country affected by terrorism after accusing the civilian-led government of insecurity. The study showed that young people across the continent are less engaged than their elders in civic and political activities that can spur socio-economic and political change. And that he says politicians use youth to ascend to power.
People who wield power normally bring in the youth only to shout in rallies and to use them as hoodlums. Nobody wants to use the youth in productive work. During the campaigns is when you see them being deployed and for a pittance. But nobody wants to sensitize them so that they are able to play their rightful role.
Victor Ochen is the head of the African Youth Initiative Network in Uganda. He says youth need a civic education that addresses their problems.
The civic education should aim at addressing the ethnic and tribal ingredients in African democracy. Nepotism is so high to the point that majority are pushed to struggle for the leftovers. They're pushed to struggle for the residues, and yet the few minority are taken, and this is paralyzing all hope among young generation. It's also undermining the prospect for a political culture that is peaceful, where change is by votes, not by guns.
The researchers say unemployment worries many Africans, and they want their government to address it. The study found that the youth are more educated than their elders, but are more likely to be unemployed. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Nigerian authorities say national defense, internal security, and economic stability are the top priorities in the 2024 budget that President Bola Tinubu delivered to lawmakers on Wednesday. Improving security is a major challenge for Tinubu's government as it desperately seeks to attract foreign investments to grow the country's struggling economy. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian President Bola Tinubu presented his $35 billion 2024 federal budget to lawmakers at a joint session of the National Assembly. Under the new budget, authorities allocated about $4 billion or 12% of the total budget to defense and security, the largest single allocation to any sector. In his first budget speech since coming to office, Tinubu told lawmakers that security is important to safeguard lives, property, and investments across the country. Tinubu said he will overhaul Nigeria's internal security architecture to boost performance operations and achieve better results. But experts say Nigerian authorities have consistently increased military spending in recent years without making Nigerians safer and more secure. Kabiru Adamu is an analyst for consulting firm Beacon Security in Abuja.
In the 2023 budget, security enjoyed the largest allocation, and we're seeing the same thing in this current budget draft, but the budget that was submitted to the National Assembly. There is, I think, almost about 30 to 40% increase in the provision. But unfortunately, we haven't seen remarkable improvement in the provision of security to equate this attention that government is given in terms of funding. So what is the challenge? I think it has to do with accountability and monitoring the performance of the security sector.
Africa's largest economy faces many security problems, including a 14-year Islamist insurgency in the northeast, separatist violence in the south, often deadly clashes between pastoralists and farmers, and proliferation of kidnap-for-ransom gangs in the northwest and central regions. Tinubu, who embarked on bold economic reforms, including the scrapping of fuel subsidies and removal of foreign exchange restrictions, promised to fix security problems if elected. But this week, local residents in northwest Zamfara State said they are still reeling after armed gangs last Friday attacked their villages and kidnapped more than 100 residents. The gangs are demanding about $236,000 for the captives' freedom. Security analyst Senator Irebu says corruption is the reason the increased military spending is not yielding results.
Do they have the capacity, all these agencies, MDA, to actually maximize this budget, the amount? Then the issue of corruption, how are this money expended? How is it being disbursed? Is it rightly used for what it's supposed to use? Then the issue of approach, then the issue of political will and interest of conflict merchants.
In October, President Tinubu signed what he called performance bond with cabinet members. The agreement allows authorities to review the performance of serving officials and hold those underperforming accountable. But Adamu says he's worried about one thing.
What we are hoping is that that performance bond would be measured in a manner, implemented rather in a manner that we will see an improvement in security. Security personnel do not willingly subject themselves to the civilian administration. I worry a little bit.
Meanwhile, Nigerian authorities predict the economy will grow by 3.76% next year, well above the global average. In recent weeks, the president has been meeting with foreign officials and business leaders with the aim of attracting more investments to Nigeria. In one notable deal, Saudi Arabia agreed to rehabilitate Nigeria's non-functioning oil refineries. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Henry Kissinger, the controversial former U.S. National Security Advisor and Secretary of State whose global influence long outlasted his time in office under former President Richard Nixon, has died at age 100. Born in Germany, he and his family, who were Jewish, fled to the United States in 1938 to escape the Nazis. He joined the U.S. Army during the Second World War and then studied at Harvard University and joined the faculty. When he came into office in 1969, then-President Richard Nixon chose Kissinger as his national security advisor. He was later also named as Secretary of State, becoming the first person to hold both positions at once. He also was the first immigrant to serve as Secretary of State. He helped negotiate the end of the Vietnam War and engaged with China in 1972, setting the stage for President Nixon's visit to the communist country to meet with Chairman Mao Zedong, the first by a U.S. president. Kissinger advised every American president since Nixon up until President Joe Biden, who did not invite him to the Oval Office. The Israeli military says Hamas freed two Israeli women this afternoon and more hostage releases were expected to follow. Israel is expected to release about 30 Palestinians it holds in prisons. Talks continue on expanding the current ceasefire, which Hamas and Israel early today extended for 24 days. Militants took about 240 captives from Israel during the October 7th attack that Israel officials say killed around 1,200 people, most of them civilians. In response, Israel has vowed to eliminate Hamas, an Islamist movement, with an armed wing. Its bombardment and ground offensive have killed nearly 15,000 people, according to Gaza's Hamas government. Since the ceasefire began last week, Hamas has freed more than 80 hostages, both Israel citizens and foreign nationals. Israel has released about 180 Palestinian prisoners from its jails. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has been in Israel today, his third trip to the region since the conflict began. In addition to meeting with Israeli officials, he also went to the West Bank to meet with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. In that meeting, Blinken condemned extremist Israel violence against Palestinians in the West Bank. Early today, I spoke with VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain about Blinken's trip and his later travel to the climate summit in Dubai. So, Cindy, what is the purpose of this trip?
Well, the main purposes of the trip, as you said, are starting with the Secretary Blinken wants to prolong the pause in fighting. He said that this is productive, saying that hostages are being released, they're being reunited with their families, and also desperately needed humanitarian aid is flowing into Gaza for Palestinian civilians. So that is one main objective, is prolonging these pauses. Another, though, is that when the truce does end, and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has made clear that that the war is not over, the U.S. is being very deliberate in saying that what behind the scenes, at least, what happened in northern Gaza should not be repeated in southern Gaza, and that there needs to be more and better protections for civilians, many of whom Israel asked to flee from the north to the south, so that the kind of weapons and the kind of operations that were deployed in the north should not happen in the south.
There are growing international calls for a longer ceasefire and rising anger over civilian casualties in Gaza. Is there a sense that U.S. support and its message to Israel is evolving?
Yes, exactly. And I just touched that on a little bit with concern and that being relayed very strongly, also in a phone call from President Biden to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu about operations in the south. But also with concerns being relayed about Israeli settlers attacking Palestinians in the West Bank. So I think that tone is changing. And there was one tweet by President Biden recently where he said that Hamas just wants to sow like a never-ending cycle of violence in the between Israeli and Palestinians. And he said that is not in our interest. But basically, a bit of a change there, saying military solutions are not the answer.
Did Secretary Blinken meet with Mohammed Abusa at the West Bank?
Yes, he did meet with him, and Abbas raised the topic of the forced deployment of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, and basically pressed for, as you said, for a longer ceasefire, and emphasized the unity of Palestinians, saying that in the West Bank, Palestinians would not abandon Palestinians in Gaza.
And finally, Cindy, after this trip, Secretary Blinken heads to the COP28 climate summit in Dubai. What message will he be taking to Dubai?
Right. Well, there was some disappointment that at this largest ever climate gathering, President Biden was not planning to attend himself, and the Chinese President Xi is also not attending, arguably two of the most important leaders for this critical issue of climate change. But we've gotten word that Vice President Kamala Harris will also attend on behalf of President Biden on December 1st and 2nd. And we have Secretary Blinken and the U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry. So it will be a big presence there. And the U.S. has said it will work with China to make sure that these U.N. Climate negotiations are a success.
VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain, thank you for your input.
My pleasure.
Around the world, people are marking the United Nations 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Help us mark the work to end violence against women by sharing your thoughts on VOA's English to Africa radio programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076, before December 10th. Tell us what is being done in your community to fight gender-based violence and tell us why this issue is important to you. That number again is +1 202 258 3076.
At least 17 people have died in an anthrax outbreak in southern Uganda this month. Health official Edward Mwanga told the French news agency AFP the outbreak occurred in Kwetera district, around 180 kilometers from Kampala. He said it is thought the victims ate meat from a farm where the animals had contracted anthrax. Mwanga says the situation is under control thanks to the cooperation of working teams from the Ministry of Health headquarters in Kampala and the World Health Organization. Anthrax spores exist naturally in the soil and commonly infect livestock which ingest or inhale them while grazing. Humans can become infected from contact through breathing in the spores, eating contaminated food, or through cuts in the skin, for instance, by handling diseased animals. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Shogun Chung, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.